Hi, everyone. I'm Anita Lustria, and for many years I did live radio. Then I transitioned to the podcast world where I feel I found my home. I love talking about spiritual formation, justice issues, and spiritual practices. Throw in the Enneagram, movies, and current events from time to time, and that's what you get on the podcast. I'm glad you've come along for the ride. Welcome to Faith Conversations. Welcome to Faith Conversations, everyone. I'm excited that this is the first Faith Conversations of the new year, 2021. There's something about, you know, tearing off the last sheet of the old year and opening up the calendar for the new year, whether you have a handwritten calendar like some friends I have, or whether you do an electronic calendar, no matter which kind, it is a new year. And wow, I think we're all happy to leave 2020 in the rearview mirror, but I think we have a lot to reflect on and many things to look ahead to in 2021. So I have invited a dear friend to come along and join me on this podcast, Michelle Van Loon, who also made the trek from Chicagoland to the holy trek from Chicagoland to Sarasota, Florida. Michelle, welcome back to Faith Conversations.
Thanks for having me. And hello to all of the listeners shoveling today.
Yeah. So. I know. We're shoveling sunshine.
Sunshine.
I know. That little quip never gets old. And except to the northern friends. Sorry, friends. Hey, originally, I invited Michelle on the podcast to talk about regret. I thought, and maybe it sounds like a downer of a New Year topic, right? Because she's written a book called If Only, Letting Go of Regret. And I don't know, there's something that stirred in me. And I thought, you know, this actually would be a good topic, because I think many of us might look at 2020 and feel some regret. Maybe we were slugs on the sofa. Maybe we were didn't mask up like we should, you know, whatever. I you fill in the blank. I don't know. But then I thought, first podcast of the year, let's not yet dive into regret. Let's give ourselves a breather and look back and look forward. So I decided to shift gears a little bit with Michelle. And thankfully, Michelle, you didn't mind. You were good but maybe give just a brief teaser, because you and I are gonna launch into and talk about regret next week, if you're available.
Well, my busy travel schedule. Right. I don't know
exactly where are we going.
Busy,
right?
Travel schedule of traveling from one couch to another.
Yeah,
or can walk outside.
Or can you fit one more Zoom call in?
Yeah, well, right? That's a different
that's
question.
Right. It is
entirely. So, well, so much Brady Bunch viewing.
Yes,
so
exactly. Oh man. Well, so say a word about If Only. You and I were talking before I hit the record button, and you said, wow, I forgot how much I really liked this book. When someone writes a book, you know, you write and you're really in the thick of it for whatever, 12 to 18 months. You wait for it to get published. And then Michelle, because you're more of a prolific author than I am, I've not written anything in several years, but you know, you move on to the next thought, the next idea, the next nudge of the Holy Spirit, and you write something else. Plus you're writing articles and blog posts, which people, it's worth signing up for Michelle's blog, as well as the Perennial Gen, all of these things. So I'll have links in the show notes to that. So anyway, doing that first. But you said, wow, I forgot how much I like this book, If Only, Letting Go of Regret. So maybe give a quick thumbnail sketch of what we might be looking at next week.
Well, I think that most people are very haunted, either directly or indirectly, by regrets. The minute you make a choice, whatever the choice is, you close the door on a bunch of other choices. And those if-onlys can be very insistent in our lives, or we can do all kinds of things to try to escape that voice that said, we screwed up, we went the wrong direction, we messed up, this is irredeemable, and, you know, you blew it, basically. And I spend the time in the book looking at lots of different kinds of regrets.
Nice.
But with the point of saying God wastes nothing and he redeems. And so if there's a hopeful note to carry into 2021, it is that God does redeem. And all of us walking out of 2020, I think, are carrying shock and
trauma,
grief. Trauma, yeah. And all of the above.
Yeah.
And regret just amplifies those things. So
I was thinking also about FOMO, you know, fear of missing out. I feel like that's a handmaiden of regret also, that, or that they hold hands a lot. Yeah. So, and that's something that's big in our culture.
Skip around the maypole and we're the maypole. Yeah. So
that gives folks an idea of what we will dive into in another week, but we're setting that aside for today. Not that themes of along those lines might come up as we talk a little bit about 2020 and look ahead to the new year. I did want to read a couple of emails that came in, and Michelle, you can kind of react to these along with me. One from a listener, her name is Carol, and she sent a gift through PayPal, a year-end gift to the podcast. And
Carol,
I was so touched. I really was deeply touched. And she says, I continue to listen to Faith Conversations regularly. I was particularly challenged by your podcast that focused on race. I hope you continue to address that topic, along with social justice more broadly, mixed in with your other pet topics such as spiritual formation and faith shifting. Keep up the good work, Carol. And I so appreciated that. And actually, I sent her a thank you note this morning, an email note, and said, thanks for the nudge, because I took a break from that topic, Michelle, because I thought listeners maybe needed a break, and I felt like I needed a break because I had talked about race and race conversations for a number of weeks in a row. But what I said to Carol was, thanks for the nudge, because people of color and different ethnic backgrounds, you know this well, they never can take a break from this.
That's right. And, you know, they're not different categories that aren't connected. Everything that you listed, whether it's spiritual formation or cultural engagement, it's all part of who we are. The more that our lives become integrated, you know, we don't have a bunch of file folders. God doesn't see us that way. So good word from Carol.
Yeah. Got another email from a listener. His name is Michael. And I have gathered on Faith Conversations a Catholic following, along with the evangelical following as well. And Michael is a Catholic listener. This was really interesting to me. And I'll be interested in your comments on this. So he mentions two podcasts that touched him deeply in the latter weeks of this, of 2020. So he said, November 30th, the episode with Melinda Schmidt, a mutual friend of yours and mine, was on waiting. So we talked about waiting, and he said that really hit the spot, especially now, nowadays. He goes, near the end, about 37 minutes in, Anita asked a good question to ponder. What is God birthing in you during this difficult season of waiting, this year of waiting during COVID-19? And Anita then tied in the current experience of waiting with the traditional practice of Advent, which we have just moved through and still moving through the days of Christmas, moving into Epiphany. And he said, as I heard this question, I blurted out to no one in particular, that is so good. He goes, this was immediately followed on the podcast by Melinda exclaiming, that is so good. It was virtually an echo. So these words must be good indeed? And I think that is a valid question that does go along. Actually, I have more to read from Michael, but let me stop on that question for a moment because it goes along with the idea of looking back and looking forward. What is God birthing in you during this difficult season of waiting, which we have just come through? I will say, which we are still in, of course, with a little bit of hope sprinkled into the mix now with a vaccine, as I will, you know, I'll relate it to COVID-19. But yeah, I think we need to look at that. We can't just sit and stew, but let's look to God. What is God birthing in us during this difficult season, right? We have to ask those questions.
And I think asking them just means not rushing in quickly with an answer. We are inculcated in the way that we go, sit in a classroom or whatever, is teacher asks a question, kid raises hand, answer is given, we all move on. Tests are presented, we color in the little A, B, or C, or D. And I think that some questions, the questions of spiritual direction, which that's such a good question that you ask, and it comes out of that, is not meant for a quick answer.
Thank you. I appreciate you highlighting that. I hadn't thought and gone that direction, but yes, it is more a question to sit with over time, mm-hmm. and see what bubbles up, see what the Holy Spirit bubbles up along those lines in the midst of that, sitting with that question.
I think a lot of people, especially as we begin a new year, a new calendar year, I always like to try to put word calendar in there.
Thank you.
Because there are other ways of measuring a year.
Excuse me, commercial. Time out, Michelle.
I wasn't even going to do a commercial.
I know you weren't, but I am. Yeah, I know you weren't. So Michelle has written a really cool book called Moments and Days. And I don't have it in front of me, so I don't know the subtitle, but it's about the Jewish calendar and the Christian calendar. Maybe you could give the subtitle in a blurb.
The subtitle is How Our Holy Celebrations Shape Our Faith. But the point is that there are other ways of measuring time besides that we get to turn over a calendar page on the wall calendar and say, "Woo, 2020's over, and now everything's going to be fine." I'm pretty sure that most people listening to this probably are thinking, and the 2020 is continuing for a lot of us, or a lot of this. But being able, instead of making resolutions or even the people that pick a word of intention or a word of prayer, instead to just maybe in addition to, or instead of, to just sit with a question. Maybe this is not the year for a resolution as much as it is the willingness to sit with the discomfort of an unanswered question.
Yeah, that's good. So Michael goes on to mention something else that we talked about. Melinda and I had this conversation. Melinda was talking about it had to do with listening only to the pastor and not thinking things through ourselves, you know, that general mm-hmm. theme. And Michael goes on, and this is interesting because this is his Catholic perspective. He raised something that I had not thought about. I was pointing the finger, you know, or I felt that from Melinda, and I was probably right along with her, kind of pointing the finger more at the pastor and at a system that we might be in, a type of church where we're really told things, not invited into a conversation from the pulpit. So that lets you know. So Michael goes on to say, that he appreciated this discussion of people ceding their spiritual power to the pastor. Anita, you and Melinda tied this movement to stages of faith. This is a very useful way of looking at this dynamic. There's another aspect that might be in play, at least from the Catholic perspective. Clericalism, he said, it's called. So clericalism, he said, James Mallon, a Catholic priest from Nova Scotia, treats this in his book Rebuilt. He states that people that don't want to take responsibility for their own spiritual growth or discipleship often cede power to priests. In other words, these people say, in effect, if you don't demand too much of me or challenge me to act on my baptismal call in the Catholic tradition, I'll not trouble you. I'll sit in the pew, be quiet, and contribute to the collection. Clericalism in the Catholic experience, and thanks for the shout out, I think I mentioned his name, results more from the laity not accepting spiritual responsibility than it does from priest leaders grabbing power. I don't know if this is comparable in any way to the evangelical experience. It may still be related to the stages of faith, though. Oh my goodness, that was like a big light bulb moment for me. I had been putting blame where it might need to go in part, but I had put no blame on the person in the pew ceding power. All right, Michelle, I see you on the screen, very animated here. You get this.
I get both.
Yes,
partly because I've been everywhere, man, like Johnny Cash sang, but I knew an Anglican rector who once said that some of the people, older, more established, wealthy, comfortable members of the congregation, outsourced their faith to him. You know, just like they would hire, you know, a gardener or a house cleaner. They outsourced that part of their lives.
What a great pick. I mean, that says it.
It's a really good word. And I think that that's what your writer was referring to. And both are, I have another friend who says so well, you can fall off the horse from either side. So
that's good.
Either, you know, you may have a spiritual authority figure in your life that you've given too much power to, or you've
chosen. They may have taken too much, like, you know, they may be
or you're just outsourcing. So
yeah, that was a good new thought to me. I was totally only pointing one direction, and I love that you could fall off the horse in either direction. That's good. So thank you, Michael. I'm really thinking about that one today. So okay. And then he goes on to say, talk about the December 21st episode with Mike. He said there was a real prophetic spirit that came out of it. I was happy to hear Mike state why he's doing what he's doing, why he writes the rumblings, etc. And, you know, he went on to talk about that, and I certainly appreciate Mike and his rumblings. I know you do as well, as you tend to read those on Fridays. Also, and I think we need to be courageous, and now it's not everyone's call. Not everyone has that prophetic voice, so to speak, but Mike certainly feels that call and leans into that and continues to say yes, I should say. Yeah.
Yep. That's, we need those voices, and it's not just the ones that say, they're there, all is well. It's the disruptors of the status quo, when the status quo is not a good place for any of us, or a place of flourishing for any of us. So
yeah, totally. I ran across something on the interwebs that I wanted to share. I'm sure it's a Facebook post from someone, but I thought this was worth tossing out here, and it was prefaced by saying, you know, that this was written by someone who had crossed the 70-year age mark and heading toward 80, what sorts of changes he was feeling in himself. And so he wrote these various points. I read it and see what you think. And I thought, 80 or, you know, 70 toward 80. Are you kidding me? That's good for anyone along the age spectrum. I don't care what category you're in. But I thought some of these were good, and feel free to, you know, throw a comment in here and there. After loving my parents, my siblings, my spouse, my children, and my friends, I've now started loving myself. Wow.
And you know what? If you're listening and you're 22, this is your year to start.
That's good. That's good. You know, sometimes we don't have a choice. You know, you have underlying health concerns. You know, you don't have a choice. You have to pay attention. Well, you do have a choice. You know,
I do have a choice. I do. And all of those other people in our lives, that we serve, that we love, that we learn from, that we listen to, that we don't listen to, they deserve that from us, but not if our identity is in doing all those things.
There
and it
go.
Sounds like that's what that
there
writer was saying, you know, like, I need to be a part of this as well.
Well,
not last, not the caboose.
Yeah. And I'm going to might make some people mad right now, but I decided during 2021 that a way to love myself and also my neighbor, but both, was to wear a mask wherever I went.
Yes, please. Just saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know it can be, it's controversial. For some, it's uncomfortable for everyone.
It's thank you for saying that. Absolutely. Who likes this? No one.
No.
No one. But you know what? I have a friend, you. I have and I have an elderly mother, both living near me, that need people to wear masks. They both, you and my mom, both have these underlying health concerns. And wearing a mask or not staying distanced or whatever can literally mean life or death, and we have a huge death count currently in America that's rising because of this. And I'm, you know, it's not the only reason, but I'll tell you, it's a big reason.
Well, if you want to pick a controversial topic, that it is in some circles, and I wish it wasn't.
I do
too. It's not in most places in the world. And under all different kinds of regimes, it's not.
Yeah.
So listeners, it'd be great if you were here for this year because you were well.
Yes, indeed. For those that get mad and leave listening to the podcast, I'll just ask the others of you to step up the financial support.
Yes, yes.
to give on PayPal, the email address is producer@anitalustria.com. There you go. All right, let me move on here. This older gentleman said, I've realized I'm not Atlas. The world does not rest on my shoulders. That's a good thing to come to an awareness of. How are you doing with that, Michelle? how are you doing with that, my Enneagram 2 friend?
I was just about to say, you're asking a caregiver with a propensity for codependence when I was younger anyway. And I get, if there's been a lesson that has been underscored this year, it's that there's so much I can't do. A family member is in trouble. I can't get on a plane and go see them and fix it and help. And
not that that's your specific role anyway, but
not anyway, but you know, that's off the table. And so, my caregiving is in completely different ways. And, it's forced me to lean into prayer. It's forced me to lean into lament, in ways that, were more academic in some areas, because I always thought maybe I can help, maybe I can fix it, I can be the answer to my own prayer. Yes, sometimes, but not all the time.
Well, I'm not going to read all these, but I'm going to touch down on a couple. I like this one. I leave my waitress a big tip. The extra money might bring a smile to her face. She is toiling much harder for a living than I am. And I'll add to this that this morning I read in my morning news feed that, and I forget how many, 12 or 20, I know that's a difference, but states voted to increase the minimum wage. Well, I was all excited to look at this list and to see. This is me. I'm picturing, oh, all these states have now put it at $15 an hour. I don't know what planet I was living on. Obviously not the Earth in America. I was so disgusted with the state of Florida, who is one who voted to increase by 9 cents per hour and still has the on the list of those who chose to increase. Still has the lowest minimum wage. It's like $8.65 an hour. And there are other states. I was heartened by a couple states who raised it by a dollar per hour, you know, putting it in some states to 12, 13. Oh, wowzer. And so when I read about this man, like, you know what? I leave my waitress a big tip. That's a good word for those of us who can do that moving into 2021.
In most places... people that are servers, it's assumed that their wages will be made by tips. So minimum wage is not typically a question.
That's true. And I forget that. I know. It's just, oh.
Well, I have a family that's in the food service business. And those tips, even if it's mediocre service, those tips can make such a big difference, and it's just kind. It's what kindness looks like right now.
Nice. That's yes. All right. One more.
All right.
I give compliments freely and generously. Compliments are a mood enhancer, not only for the recipient, but also for me. And a small tip for the recipient of a compliment: never, never turn it down. Just say thank you. So that's good for
Anita,
both.
You are looking quite smart today.
Yes. Well, someone else wrote this, but I honestly, so I have to think about this. I think I do give compliments, but I'll tell you something else I started doing toward the end of this year, saying to people, if they were giving critical comments, hey, let's quit with the criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels really good. And we, you know what? There's enough criticism to go around. And around and around and around. And I'm even talking little things, but quit with the criticism. What can we look at and say, you know, that's good. Good job. Good, you know, whatever.
It works well with little kids.
Yes,
it works well with people in their 70s.
So, all right, I'll post that. I'll post the whole list because there are... 14 of them total, and I just touched on maybe four or five. Mm-hmm. So, Michelle, let's move on. I asked you to bring a couple of book suggestions, and so did I. Now, these can be books you read in 2020 that were highlights for you that you would recommend for people, or books that you haven't read but someone's recommended to you in your beginning, or it can go any which way. And I will say again, you, I think, know this. People on the listening to the podcast know that in 2020, I took up audiobook listening. Mm-hmm. And because I took up audiobook listening, I have finished a boatload of books. I mean, I cannot tell you the satisfaction of finishing a book, because for a podcast, you read parts of a book because you just don't get the whole book finished. And then you set it aside to prepare for the next podcast, whatever, if the person is an author. So I feel so good that I finished so many books in 2020. Plus, I only listen or tend to listen on my bike, and it keeps me out on my bike for an hour ride, and it gets me excited to get on my bike because I get to listen to a book and watch the little timer go down and take in good content. So I'm kind of belaboring this a little. I also want to tell people, yes, you can subscribe to Audible, but you don't have to. I get a boatload of free, marvelous audiobooks through my public library. There are two apps that are amazing, Hoopla, H-O-O-P-L-A, Hoopla, and Libby, LIBB, as in Bob, Y. And all you have to do is put your library card number in, and you can download audiobooks to your heart's content. It's marvelous. So I started out the year subscribing to Audible, and I stopped the subscription somewhere along the line because I was able to find so many good books and current books. And if the brand new ones aren't in your library, they will be within 2 or 3 months. So anyway, so I listened via Audible. I'll give you a couple of books here in a minute or two, but I want Michelle to go first, and end of my commercial for audiobooks. You're a paper book or ebook reader, right?
I'm a paper or screen person. I'm a visual learner, and so I'm going to put two out as a pair that are both relatively recent. I know that many of your listeners are processing church experiences, evangelical subculture experiences. And so there have been two books that have come out. I feel like they really need to be read in partnership with one another, because they both contain an important part of the conversation for those that are trying to make sense of how did we get here? What about all of these leaders that, you know, we're finding out all kinds of terrible things about? And what about us followers? And how did we get here? So the first one came out at the beginning of the year, maybe the end of last year. Kate Bowler is the author, and her book is called The Preacher's Wife. And it looks specifically at the paths that women take in the evangelical world, in the conservative world, to access power through a dramatic testimony or marrying the right guy. Not so much about giftedness or learning or character, but these other kind of ways to access power. The second one is a newer book that came out at the end of 2020 called Jesus and John Wayne. What a great title.
That's an awesome title.
That in the meeting where they came up with that. I think she may have had the idea, but a lot of times book titles are not always created by the author.
Right. Now, who wrote Jesus and John Wayne?
Jesus and John Wayne, the author's name is Kristen Cobes Dumez, D-U-M-E-Z.
And is it Kristen with a K?
Yes, Kristen with a K and Cobes with a K. It is a book about...
Also, before you say a book about, just want people to know, I will post links to these in the show notes, so don't worry about that if you can't get this written down right now.
Cool.
Okay, it's a book about... Continue, Michelle.
It is a book about men in power in evangelicalism and kind of the effect on politics specifically. She speaks more to politics than The Preacher's Wife does, but that's partly, we see so much overlap between evangelicalism and Republican politics. So she addresses some of that, but she also, she just tackles a lot of the same time period and history that Kate Bowler did in her book. And I think going forward, and no matter what stream of the church you're in, whether you're in the Catholic Church or a mainline tradition or an evangelical tradition, we are all going to have to come to terms in the coming years with our relationship with power. I'm hoping that more good thinkers and authors will come out with books that help us to really understand our relationship with power and what it is and what it isn't and what it does to us.
And yes, and also this ties back to Michael's email to the podcast, not giving our power over to someone else, not ceding our power to an authority figure, right? So I think that's really, really interesting.
We have a lot of work to do in that area, both individually and corporately. And so both of those books, if this is a topic that leaves you full of questions, both of those books are great places to begin, at least from a diagnostic point of view.
Nice. Any other book to throw in that you just really enjoyed in 2020? I will say you're Mrs. Nonfiction Reader, which I largely am, but toward the end of the year, I got going on fiction again. So I'll throw in some fiction titles if you don't have any, because you might not.
I do try, and sometimes I'm successful, but it's turned out to be more of a discipline for me to stick with a fiction book.
And that's okay. I get it.
But one memoir that I started, it's not a new book. I have not yet finished it. I had to give it back to the library because someone else was waiting for it. Was Thomas Merton's Seven Story Mountain, which is a spiritual memoir. It is a long book, but his journey, his life was so interesting. So much loss, so much transition, lots of moves between the United States and Europe, all while he was growing up. He grew up, you know, in the 20s and 30s and 40s. This book was written out of that period of his life, and he ended up as a Trappist monk. And so this journey from artist's son who traveled internationally to kind of a locked down life seemed really appropriate right now. And
good point.
Go back to finish the last third of it. Nice. Because then I got Kristen Cobb Dumez's book, and that interrupted.
Yeah, I get that.
Dying to read it. So
I will say this: memoir counts. It's nonfiction, but it's a different category than the typical nonfiction. And memoir, I love the memoir genre. So thanks for mentioning that. It's one that's on my list to read. Merton is so quotable, and I have to say, in Mike's current Rumblings that released Friday, he has a Thomas Merton quote. So I'm reading it. I read through them before he posts them. I'm reading through it, and I was expecting a modern day contemporary person with this quote, because it's like right out of the pages of today's history. And then I go, Thomas Merton. I looked at Mike. I go, what? I did not expect that. And so Merton is a worthy read. His, you know, there are other books, but the Seven Story Mountain is the one that just, you hear that title over and over.
It lives up to its belovedness.
Oh, cool. Okay. All right. Well, I'll take over with the books now, and I'll throw in a couple of fiction books into the mix. Okay. And I will say this, I'll mention nonfiction first. I had never, believe it or not, never read Rachel Held Evans. Certainly knew of her, you know, who she passed away last year. And so I actually listened to three of her books on bike rides, and one of them, two of them really spoke to me, but maybe the one I'll recommend to people who might be struggling a little bit with questions and doubts, Searching for Sunday was a great read. So I'll toss that one out there. Also, the year before, Elizabeth Gilbert's book, Big Magic on Creativity and the Creative Life, really spoke to me powerfully. So this year, though, in its place, another book that just spoke to me was Julia Cameron's book, It's Never Too Late to Begin Again. She's known for The Artist Way. I own that, had never read it, but It's Never Too Late to Begin Again spoke to me as a 60-year-old woman, and loved it, thoroughly enjoyed that, and some of the exercises.
Read that book.
Have you? Okay.
And I can say it's like a workshop.
Yes.
Seminar.
Totally.
Not just a book.
I will say I brought along, and Michelle, you maybe, I don't know if I said this when I brought the questions, but Michelle and I are in a conversation group together. I brought a couple of times questions from Julia Cameron's book as my question for conversation group, or just, you know, tailored it to the group because they, some of her questions really spoke to me. So fiction, on to fiction. Evie Drake Starts Over by Linda Holmes. Just a light read that I found interesting, and the starting over theme never gets old for me. Obviously, It's Never Too Late to Begin Again by Julia Cameron. And then
Is this Linda Holmes of the of NPR?
I don't know.
Happy Hour?
You know what? She might be.
I'm almost positive. That's also, that's one of my regular podcasts.
Ah, Happy Hour Podcast, NPR. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. Good. Oh, another time we'll have to talk about podcasts.
Very yeah. Great. So
Evie Drake Starts Over. I really, it was delightful. Loved it.
Cool.
And then I just finished The Island of Sea Women by Lisa C. Lisa C is probably most well known for Snowflower and the Secret Fan. Is that the name? I think that's right. Wonderful book. And she's written many others, but fascinating read. The Island of Sea Women, a culture in Korea where women are the breadwinners, and the, I didn't even realize this as I started reading it. I mean, and they have the ability to dive deep and collect, you know, sea urchins, abalone. I mean, they have unbelievable lung capacity and strength, and have been studied at one point in time because they can go into extremely cold water and stay. And so the men cooked and took care of children. It was fascinating. And I think the biggie, in the end, it's a huge story about forgiveness and holding on to a deep hurt. And it ties in with the regret theme, Michelle, that you and I are going to enter into in another week. So that was good. And then, but I will say, I was introduced to, back to the Evie Drake Starts Over. I've been introduced to several fiction books by a friend also named Michelle DeRussia. So that's where I got The Evie Drake Starts Over and this other book that I am currently reading, which is totally capturing me, called Magical Journey, An Apprenticeship in Contentment. It's by Katrina Kennison. I had never heard of her. I love her writing. She reminds me of the early days of... When the Heart Waits, the author of Secret Life of Bees, you know her. Yes, and I can't believe I'm blanking out on her name.
Oh, let's just ask the internet because my brain just went blank.
She just wrote a controversial book too. Anyway, I'm asking the internet who Sue Monk Kidd. Thank you for.
Winner!
Thank you for saving my, you know, the listeners for wading through my internet search. But this Katrina Kennison, just beautiful writing. I am delighted Michelle DeRussia got me going with her books. So, and I will say, I want to be a journaler. This is the last book I'll mention. I want to be a journaler so badly. I'm not a good journaler, and I think I found a book that might help me. And it's a big, thick book. It's called Rumi's Reflection Journal. And so, for instance, there's blank space on the page. You can write in it, or you could draw. Day one of the new year, you are not a drop in the ocean. You are the entire ocean in a drop. Reflections. Okay, what am I going to reflect? You know what? I've already thought about this. I'm just going to draw a big blue drop with a little person stick figure in the middle of it. You know, that's going to be my journaling for the first one. But there are just some roomy thoughts and then space for reflection about it. Mm-hmm. And there you go. I think I'm going to become a journaler this year, Michelle. It's my goal.
We're gonna check in a few months and find out how it's going.
Please do. Okay. All right. We need to wrap this up. And Lori Neff recommended a book to me. And I'm already so glad I bought it. I was talking to her about Rumi, and she said she actually bought the Rumi's Reflection book too, because she said, oh, that looks really good. But she said, I have been a huge fan of Hafiz poetry. So she recommended two books. I bought The Gift by Hafiz, and I can't tell you how many poems in the book I already love. But I'm going to close our time with this one, because it's my prayer for us as a listening community in the new year, this year, 2021. Here it is. I am a hole in a flute that Christ's breath moves through. Listen to this music. I am a hole in a flute that Christ's breath moves through. Listen to this music. May we indeed be instruments through which Christ moves, the Holy Spirit moves in this new year, that we might, through our own lives, breathe the breath of God upon others and be transformed in the process. That is my prayer for this year.
Amen.
Oh, Michelle, thank you. Thanks for reflecting and being with me and offering great recommended reading as well. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. And blessings to each one of you listening as you let that breath flow through you today.
And as always, I say, keep the conversation going.